As a child, were you taught, as was I, not to speak or associate with strangers? Our mother bequeathed that little bit of parental admonition to my brother and me as early as I can remember. She and my brother still seem to live by that rule, for the most part, whereas I, like my father, seem to connect a little more easily with the stranger, the outsider, the other. A former very involved Church of St. Michael and St. George parishioner told me just a few weeks ago that in her family's new city in a southern state, of all places, her nearest Episcopal church is unfriendly and unwelcoming, and that even after several visits and some effort to become active and involved, she feels as though she is invisible and she is no shrinking violet, let me tell you. Although it hasn't been my or Robin's experience in St. Louis, I have heard St. Louis called insular and provincial and unwelcoming, either socially or economically. I've heard the opposite of that as well, and it always surprises me when I do hear that other. I remember reading about the 19th century Gilded Age and old New York society of Mrs. Astor's 400, the old families and traditional social groups invited to her grand mansion and lavish parties, to the exclusion of the de classe nouveau riche. One of her 20th century descendants, who at the time was the richest man in the world, married a woman who became known as Mrs. Vincent Astor. Brooke was my summer parishioner in Maine until she died, and she was one of the kindest, welcoming, most inviting women I've ever known, friends of royalty and fishmonger alike, even an Episcopal priest in absolute awe of her. Either building walls to exclude or drawing larger and larger circles to include as many as possible is a game as old as humankind, and Jesus experienced it too. His words today, whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Have you ever visited a Benedictine monastery or convent? You've been visited by one. The monks at St. Louis Abbey, when they come to sing Vespers for us a number of times, and then those of us who go out to their place, their monastery, and sing evensong. The monks and nuns live by the ancient little rule of faith called the Rule of Benedict, which goes back to St. Benedict of Nursia in Italy, when around 540, he composed his monastic rule. All who undertake Benedictine religious vows pledge themselves to Christ and each other three ways. One, stability of life. That just means they stay in one place. They don't church shop. They don't monastery shop. Two, amendment of life, constant conversion of life. And obedience, which is not rule-keeping, but really means to listen with the ear of the heart, to give people attention, your attention. Pope St. Gregory the Great wrote Benedict's life in the second book of his dialogues. He adopted Benedict's monasticism as the instrument of evangelization when in 596 he sent Augustine and his fellow monks to convert the Anglo-Saxon people. Tradition has it that the Pope was down by the harbor at the docks, and a slave ship came in, and as they were unloading the slaves, he saw a group of young, fair-haired, blue-eyed young men. And he turned to his people that he was with, and he said, "Oh, who are these angels, angelos?" He said, "Oh, no, Holy Father, not angels, angelos, but angles." And he said, "Well, we must send someone to help them find Christ." That's why the Anglican Communion around the world, the Episcopal Church in the U.S., our Book of Common Prayer, and the Church of St. Michael and St. George are shot through and through with a Benedictine ethos. But what any Benedictine knows and would have us know is that there's really a fourth corollary, another kind of vow, and that is hospitality. Here is Benedict's rule. It's in number 3, third chapter. Let all guests who arrive be received like Christ, for he is going to say, "I came as a guest, and you received me." In the salvation of guests, Whether arriving or departing, let all humility be shown. Let the head be bowed or the whole body prostrated on the ground in adoration of Christ, who is indeed received in their persons. In the reception of poor and of pilgrims, the greatest care and solicitude should be showed, because it is especially in them that Christ is received. And again in chapter 53, in its brief, all guests who present themselves are to be welcomed as Christ, who said, "I was a stranger, and you welcomed me." The ancient rabbis said, hospitality is one form of worship. And the message to the stranger is clear. Come right in. Come right in and disturb our perfect lives. You are the Christ for us today. And that translates perfectly to our experience of church here at St. Michael and St. George. Here's one more from Sister Chittister, who writes the commentary to the Rule of Benedict, and she says that our welcome should not be based on human measurements alone when we welcome those to us. We like you. We're impressed with you. You look like our kind. You're clean and scrubbed and minty-breathed and worthy of our attention. Benedict, she says, wants us to let down the barriers of our hearts so that this generation does not miss accompanying the innocent to Calvary as the last one did. Benedict wants us to let down the boundaries of our souls so that the God of the unexpected can come in the person who is Christ to us. It's a barren prayer, St. Cyprian said, that does not go hand in hand with alms. And for the Benedictine heart, the reception of the poor is an essential part of going to God. Benedictine hospitality is not simply bed and bath. It's home and family. And while we're on the subject of the poor, here's something from the letter of James, the Lord's brother, who writes to his first century Jerusalem congregation. My brothers and sisters, as believers in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ, don't show favoritism. Suppose a man comes into your meeting wearing a gold ring and fine clothes, and a poor man in shabby clothes also comes in. If you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes and say, here's a good seat for you, but say to the poor man, you stand here or sit on the floor by my feet, have you not discriminated among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? Listen, my dear brothers and sisters. Has not God chosen those who are poor in the eyes of the world to be rich in faith and to inherit the kingdom he promised to those who love him? And here's one little sentence from the book Letter to the Hebrews, two sentences. Keep on loving each other as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some people have entertained angels unawares. Speaking about your church, what does it mean to receive another as the Christ who comes as a stranger? I love this sweet little story. It's another glimpse into Benedict. It's written by St. Gregory. Benedict has been alone in a cave in his cell for 3 years in silence, total solitude, when he's visited, surprisingly, by a priest sent especially by God who wished Benedict to have company at Easter. The scene's charming. It's even kind of humorous. Benedict is so deep in prayer and so isolated, so far away from everything, that he has no idea that it is Easter. But to the priest's greeting, he replies, Easter it is indeed, since I have the joy of seeing you. In the face of the first person that he sees, Benedict finds the first fruits of the resurrection and of the new life and world to which he is called. So I ask